This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Junkies here. Going to talk some college hoops. Mike DeCourcy joins us on the Rude Guest Hotline. He's with the Sporting News. Hey, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Great, you know, our producer came in here and said that we were going to talk about Tony Skin. He joined us in studio last week, and man, he's an impressive guy. What do you think about the job that he's done and his future?
Yeah, I think he's built himself toward this by working at the places he's worked and doing the jobs he did. And that's not to say that what he's doing isn't still amazing. It's probably now, with some changes to some other conferences, the most difficult league in America in this sense. It's probably only a one-bid league most years. There will be years when the Atlantic 10 gets more, but there is no league that is as powerful as the A-10 is that is in that category. For a while, Conference USA, the American, might have been that league, fighting sort of with the Atlantic 10 for that designation, which, of course, no one really wants. The Atlantic 10 stands alone now. It's by far the best of those conferences. And so to be dominating that league in the way that Mason is really impressive. I am one of the people, and I don't know honestly how many there are. I have no idea, on the board of selectors, which we do the nominations, and then there's a much broader group that votes for the Naismith Awards. And Tony was, I think we were asked for 10 coach of the year finalists or semifinalists or whatever. And Tony was definitely on my list. I was a little disappointed that he didn't make the cut.
Wow.
Now they lost a tough one over the weekend to VCU.
Yeah. Did you have Ryan Odom on that list?
Did not. Yeah. Although Ryan's doing a wonderful job, and that's not a surprise because it's not the first time.
Right.
He's done great work everywhere he's been. He's obviously, Tony's a younger as a head coach in terms of experience, but Ryan's done great work at three stops now, and so did a real, you know, that was a huge win for Mason. I mean, excuse me, for VCU.
Yep.
And for them, they're one of the teams that, you know, Mason had been the clear, as I do the projections, the bracket projections for Fox Sports, Mason had been a clear first place for most of the last 6 weeks, at least. And so they were always the team that I would designate as the potential A-10 champion. And so VCU has been hanging around on the first four out list or the next four out list for all of that time. But this is the kind of game that might put them both into the field. We'll see. I have to go back starting this morning. I'll be producing a daily seed list in addition to the twice weekly brackets for Fox. And so I'll have to see whether or not that moved the needle enough, but it certainly didn't hurt.
Yeah, Mason's got four games left, two home, two away. And I was talking to Chris Caputo, the head coach of GW, about the schedule, and he said anytime you go on the road, and it doesn't matter what team it is, it could be the worst team in the league. He said it's so hard to win on the road in the conference. So, but I think Mason should beat Fordham at home and LaSalle at home. They got to play Duquesne and Richmond. Richmond's not very good, but if they get to, I think they have 12 conference wins now. If they get to 16, man, it'll be hard to leave them out. You know, certainly depending on what they do in the A-10 conference tournament, but I think they have certainly earned it.
Yeah, it's hard though because with the way college basketball has changed, you know, people look at a team like Arkansas, which I think is now 5-10 in the SEC. I believe that's what the number is. But what you have to remember is how really difficult it is to win any league game in the SEC. The SEC is possibly, I mean, not like it's not Chris Mullin and Patrick Ewing in 1985, but relative to the rest of the nation in its season, I don't think we've ever had a league as powerful as this SEC is.
Right.
And they showed it on the floor in November and December. And now you're seeing teams like Auburn go out there and win consistently in this league. It's a really hard deal. And you're seeing very good teams like Oklahoma, for instance, or Arkansas earlier, that beat significant opponents from other conferences. Mm-hmm. And now they struggle to get a win against anybody in their league.
Yeah. I think they're 5-9 in the league. But you're right. The SEC has 5 of the top 12 scoring teams in the country. And like you said, we were kind of, you know, Alabama's one, but Florida scores a ton, and they've got unbelievable wins. They won at Auburn. Auburn, obviously, great because of what they can do, get up and down. They can play defense, well coached. You know, Tennessee saw what they did to A&M on the road. They've just got so many legit teams. I mean, you throw in Duke as a one seed. Do you see Duke and then 3 SEC teams as the other ones?
Yeah, right now that's what it would be.
Right.
The only team I think that can get up there with them is Houston. Mm. But Houston's got to win more big games. That's their problem. And they start, I believe it's tonight, they play against Texas A&M on the road, and that's the kind of game that Houston hasn't won this year. They've lost their 3 most difficult games, which were both neutral floors to Auburn and Alabama, and then home against Texas Tech. So they have Texas Tech on the road tonight.
Right.
They have home game against Kansas on March 3rd. The rest of it's not that tough, so they might need to excel in the Big 12 tournament as well in order to contend with that group. But if they don't, I don't know who other than Tennessee and Florida is even in contention.
Mike, I'm checking out your bracket forecast for the South. You have Maryland as a 5 seed there. You've got Michigan State as the 3 seed. Those two teams linking up in College Park Wednesday night should be a massive game. The Xfinity Center, you know, some of the students have been criticized for not showing up for some of these games, not packing the place. That should not be a problem this Wednesday as Sparty comes to town.
I've been in that place when it's packed a couple of games against Duke back in the day, and it is an amazing arena when it's full and energetic, and it will be a real challenge for Michigan State, in part because, for one, Maryland's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
When at their best, they're terrific. They are not the best at closing, and that's something that they have to do better. And it hasn't cost them in every game where they've closed questionably. The Indiana game would be an example where they did not do a great job in the final 5 minutes, but still were able to succeed because they made the last couple of plays really well. Other than that, there's not a lot to complain about. They did not play the most difficult non-conference schedule. I'm okay with that. You know, some people in my business will criticize coaches and basically call them out for not playing a tough enough schedule. My philosophy on that has always been, and this comes from being on daily beats covering Memphis, Cincinnati, Pitt, Duquesne. You play who you need to play to get good enough to win in your conference. It's as simple as that. However you feel like you need to do that, you do that. And in this case, Maryland, with a lot of new pieces, felt like they needed to teach the guys to win. Cool. They learned. They learned how to win. So now what they need to do is show that they can win some of the toughest games. And having MSU on their court on Wednesday, it would be a huge step in that direction. There's a lot of talk, especially around the Big Ten, that Illinois is so dangerous if they get into March, even though they haven't really performed well. There has been a lot of talk. I'm not sure how much we'll hear of that after Saturday's blowout loss to Duke. But that's been a lot of the conversation. But my partner, Rafael Davis at Big Ten Network, has always liked this Maryland team and has really talked a lot about that. And this would be a great example for them to show what they're capable of doing in March.
Mike, you mentioned that Duke game. I tried to watch a lot of this game, but you know, this game is a neutral floor. And I love the fact that there was a neutral floor game against two power conferences this late in the year. I think more conferences should do that. But the fact that Duke wins by 45 against Illinois, I mean, not that Illinois is as good as they usually are, but that was really impressive. And it's not just the fact that Duke can score. Defensively, they're so much better than they have been in the past. They're currently sixth in the country in field goal percentage allowed. I believe it's like 36%, 37%. So defensively, they are just one of the top teams in the country. So you couple that with the fact that they can score, and they've got so many threats that can score. Man, they are really, really tough.
They are, and that's it's interesting because one of the things I wrote about, we do a feature every Monday called DeCourcy's Dozen, and it'll be published in the next few hours, just sort of a ranking of the top dozen teams, and I do a little mini column at the top of every one about something related to one of the teams. And in the case of Duke, I wrote this week about the fact that almost all their games are blowouts. I mean, yeah. it we thought it was because the ACC is not good, and it's not. But they went out against a team from another conference that was in the first division at least, or the upper half at least, of the Big Ten, and did even worse things to them that they've been doing to NC State or Clemson, or not Clemson, but Florida State or whomever. That was a really powerful display. And there's a lot of – I get a lot of questions from people about, is this bad for Duke? Mm-hmm. Of course, winning by a lot of points, bad for them. That's how we look at things in America, I guess. Is it bad? And it's not. They played the Kansas, Kentucky, and Clemson games and were in tight games late and needed a bucket and got the ball to Cooper Flagg, and in all three cases he turned it over.
Yeah.
And in the third case, I thought he made a better move, and then there was a wet spot on the court.
He slipped
and
Clemson.
Lost his balance.
Yep.
And fell to the floor. I think he made a better move there and was in position to make a play, as opposed to the first two where he didn't even get started. So I think at least he made progress in that department. But if you're good enough to do this, you're good enough to maybe continue doing this for a while. And I compared them to Gonzaga, which has gone through the West Coast Conference for as long as they've been a national power, playing one or two, maybe three or four tough games throughout their entire conference seasons. And that they've gone to two national championship games since 2017 and made nine consecutive Sweet 16 doing that. So I don't think it has to hurt Duke. Just because they have blown out so many teams that have so rarely had the experience of what it's like to be in a close basket-for-basket game.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, you recently wrote about Patino on SportingNews.com, and you just talked about, you know, his coaching strategy really hasn't changed. He still gets after the kids. We heard that locker room speech he gave. We played that last week, just getting after the kids, talking about getting tougher.
He just wins.
And he beats UConn pretty handily over the weekend on Sunday. And he's, you know, last year in his first year at St. John's, he won 20 games, but he lost 9 conference games. This year is a totally different team, and they're probably going to be a 2 seed. So talk about the job that Patino has done. And bringing in these kids, and how, you know, it doesn't matter where he goes. If you think he's going to stay at St. John's, I got to think some bigger teams are going to be looking for him in the offseason.
Well, I would suppose that if I were Indiana, for instance, I would certainly inquire about his interest. But if I were him, would I really want to leave my home to go to Indiana and then start that program over? I'm not sure. I mean, he is 72 going on 73. I would not say that if he did that he couldn't excel at Indiana. He certainly would. But it's just a question of what does he want? out of his day-to-day existence? Is there something that he could do at Indiana that he can't do at St. John's? I would suggest at this point, probably not. I think that he has shown, by getting St. John's to this far, this fast, that if he really, if it's about winning another championship or another Final Four or whatever, this team may not be offensively strong enough to get him there, but there's no reason to believe that he can't put together at St. John's the sort of team that could do that.
Didn't he have no players 2 years ago? Like literally zero?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if his was an empty gym circumstance or not when he got there.
Just not like it is this year, yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like when Mick Cronin got to Cincinnati in 06, he had literally one player on his roster, and he was a senior. Uh-huh. When Tom Crean went to Indiana 2 years later, he had no scholarship players by the time they got to day one of practice. And you can that can happen to you now, but like Kentucky is kind of in that situation. But because of the transfer portal and immediate eligibility, you can now completely revamp your roster with high major type talents, as Kentucky did, in 3 weeks, yeah. Which Kentucky did. And so it's not really the same as what those guys encountered 15 years ago or so. But it's still hard to do. You still have to put together the right players that fit together and then fit them together better once they get on the floor. And it's still a great challenge what Louisville is doing under Pat Kelsey, for instance, and what Rick is doing at St. John's. And what I'm saying is that I really believe that if he stays at St. John's, he can do the same things there that he can do anywhere because he can sell the Garden now.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Lou Carnesecca Arena most of the year, and then we'll go to the Garden when we play somebody else that will fill it for us. And now they can go to the Garden and fill it themselves,
yeah.
As they showed in their last two games. The crowds got progressively larger, and the last two were sellouts. They even moved Seton Hall to the Garden, even though Seton Hall's having their poorest year in a decade.
What if Miami really wanted him? Sorry, I know we got to go, but I'm just throwing that name out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know he has a home down there and loves it there. But I think they've already said that it looks the reports have been that they're going toward Jay Lucas. So I think that probably he's already said thanks, but no thanks.
Okay. All right.
Mike, always enjoy talking to you. Appreciate it.
Good stuff.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Mike DeCourcy, college hoops writer for the Sporting News for the Junkies. Keep it here.